Hello, this is your host, Jigme Kyaltseng, and welcome to the Jigme Kyaltseng Show, a podcast where I sit down and speak with singer-songwriters, musicians, sports personalities, actors, radio broadcasters, and a slew of many other professionals from a broad range of fields. This newest conversation, Canadian singer-songwriter and Canada's Got Talent Season 3 contestant Daniel Powder speaks with me about his experience on Canada's Got Talent, positive and negative effects of his hit song Bad Day, battle with addiction, ghostwriting for other artists, and more, as well as his love for hockey. And now, with that being said, I hope you enjoy the episode. Daniel, hello. It's just a pleasure to be able to speak with you.
You too, man. Thank you.
I mean, is it ironic to be able to say that, like, the guy who sang Bad Day in 2005 is now sort of finding his way back into, I guess, his, I guess, I don't know how to really put it, but that, as I said it before we started recording, the re-evolutionized sort of Daniel Powder now, then the guy who, well known, the guy who
Right.
was in the spotlight, the guy who sang and recorded Bad Day. Like, what is it like now for you, I guess?
I mean, I'm not trying to, re-evolutionize myself at all. I have this incredible life where, I've come into more of a singer, like songwriter. I write songs for other artists, and there was always, like, for me, there was never a moment during those records that I was happy and enjoying myself that much. I guess it was mostly because I just didn't feel comfortable being in the spotlight. You know what I mean? So when, like, we were just talking about it, when CGT called and wanted me to come on, I was really reluctant and hesitant because, I've got a great life writing songs for other artists, international artists, and all such sorts of things. So, but being that it was like sort of the 20 years since I released Bad Day, I thought, you know what? I've never been on Canadian television. We talked about this. I had so many regrets. I took so much heat, so much so that I have a fond memory of touring with Bryan Adams, and we were in Switzerland, and his manager came out, who is Bruce Allen, and he just laid into me. He's like, "You have never supported and been in Canada, you've never, gone back, and this is your home country." And he, as angry as I was about that interaction, I came to the conclusion that he was absolutely right. And so for 20 years, I've, like, wanted to check that box, and this was a great way of doing it, to make an amends and have Canada, be there. And, I mean, they welcomed me home, so I had to go.
Is it, I guess, crazy enough to say that, like, you've really rarely never ever played in your home country of Canada until now, where you sort of, like, found yourself in this position where I haven't checked this one box off in my life yet, and I just want to tick it off so then now I can just
Exactly.
silently just ride off into the sunset again
Exactly.
and be that Daniel Powder at home and writing songs for other artists.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, if you don't mind me talking about sort of the impact that Bad Day had on your life, because at first you said financially it was sort of a good thing at the first place because it sort of eclipsed you as an artist.
Right.
But then when you sort of came back down to earth and sort of the negative impacts of that song and the success you've had and whatever, led you down to this, I guess, lonely state of mind, I guess, if that's the right way to put it. I mean, how would you describe that period of your life, I guess?
I mean, I think for me, being in that hurricane and that tornado, where it was just, I can remember doing a show in France in the morning, another TV show in Italy in the afternoon, and then a concert in Germany, all in one day. And that was just an example of what my life was like. And as it was amazing, and as grateful as I was for it, I just knew after the 3.5 years of being on the road and touring and promo and never seeing family, and I just realized it wasn't for me. So it was voluntarily really just me that really stepped away from it. I never had any re regrets. I really didn't. Was there a low period? I think the low period was being in it. You know, the low period for me was being in the spotlight and smiling. And, you know, then the song says faking a smile. Well, that's basically, you know, what it was like. And again, I got to see everything and do everything, and it was incredible. And, but ultimately, just I didn't feel comfortable being in that position anymore. And so it was really kind of, I just took, you know, had some self-reflection and realized that this wasn't really what I wanted to do. And so, yeah, I came back and took a couple of years off. And then I started writing for other artists, which has been great. I kind of feel like I'm the Wizard of Oz now. You know, I'm just behind the curtains doing my thing, and I let them do all the work.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I guess you would call that ghostwriting for other artists and,
sure.
And doing things like that. And that's cool. I mean, that, you know, like, here's a guy that, like, had so much success with his early hit with a Bad Day, and now, like, here's a guy that's now sitting back sort of enjoying life and writing songs for other artists and being the Daniel Powder he is and finding himself again and enjoying that part of your life. But also, if you don't mind me talking about, because I do know that one of your kids actually plays hockey, and tell me about that, because that's a fun part of life as well.
I mean, you know, living in LA, I had season tickets to the Kings. I mean, I'm a huge hockey fan, as a lot of us, you know, Canadians are. And when he was seven, you know, he never had any interest in hockey. He said, "Dad, can you take me to a game?" So I took him to what was it? It was Kings Blues. And the very next day he was on the ice. And that's what happened. And from being seven to what now he's 10. He just got asked to come up and play 12U when he was nine. I mean, he's a phenom right now. So he's tearing it up. He's on the ice 6 days a week. I can't keep him off the ice, you know. So it's incredible to, you know, have changed the way I looked at. I was really selfish in the beginning, you know, as all really successful artists have to be, you know. And I missed my first daughter. I missed her growing up. And when it came to these guys, to my son and my daughter now, the younger ones, it was like, you know what, I gotta be here, you know, I want to watch this. So I go to every tournament, I go to every practice, I go to every game. I have managers and publishers that call me and get upset because I'm not doing any work, but it's like I don't care.
For sure. And if you don't mind me asking, what do you mean by sort of like missing your daughter grow up, if you don't mind me asking? Because I find that curious and very interesting to know more about, I guess.
Yeah, it's incredibly, I mean, I went into the career having a young daughter who was two. I mean, it just, and you know, when I didn't really have any expectations of things going the way they went. And when they did, it was like I said, it was like a hurricane. It was like, I was just, it exploded, and I just wasn't prepared, you know, and I didn't know how I would feel, you know, being in the spotlight. I think, I don't know if I said this to you before, I've said it a lot of times, it's like, you don't really know if you want to be in the spotlight until you're in the spotlight, you know, and being away from her, for months on end, you know, there would be like, well, I can remember one time that was like 2.5 months before I saw her again. And, you know, she was like 2 inches taller, and I felt really bad. I felt really guilty not having, she didn't know who I was. I can remember when I'd come home and her mom would go out for the day, she would just scream and cry because she didn't know who I was. So that was heartbreaking for me, you know. Again, just gave me more, it changed the way I was on a cellular level. You know, and I just was like, I just don't think this is for me. Let's just say I wasn't a very popular guy at the record label when it all went down, you know. Oops, I think I lost your audio. Where are you?
Okay, there we go.
There you are. Yeah,
gotcha. Right.
Yeah.
So just talking about the spotlight, I guess I want to shift this towards sort of the sports aspect of it too, because obviously yourself being a hockey fan and your kid being and playing hockey, and watching the Kings, I guess, here myself, just you know, as a Leafs fan, you know, watching hockey in Toronto, it's completely different than seeing hockey in California and the market of itself, where it's like, well, you're not really in a high pressure market if you're not really being pressed by sort of the media of saying to like, how do you feel about this game and how do you feel about losing this game, whatever. Sort of, I guess, how do you sort of teach your kid to manage that spotlight when things get rough in terms of the ice, and also like, what if you get into a professional level and you play for the Kings one day and you get into the NHL and you're going to have to deal with these media people and asking questions that are sort of nonsense, I guess.
Right. Well, I mean, I think most, when you watch most athletes, when they're being interviewed, they're really good at deflecting. You know what I mean? They're really good at, like, they'll ask a question and they'll be like, it's a team effort, they do everything right. And I'm good at doing that. I think right now for Cash is that he's really talented. However, he's driving the boat. So before we start with anything about interviews, it's got to be everything that he does, the passion, the work ethic. I mean, he trains off ice. I mean, my garage has 5,000 holes in the walls from him shooting pucks. It's constant. And he's so I guess my point is that in the beginning, your kids have to be the ones that are, pushing the agenda. I'm not. I stay out of it with him. I don't talk to him about, hey, you got to do this, you got to do that, and but there is a lot of pressure even at his age. Right now they just came back from Denver. They won their, I think, their fifth championship this year. Right now, I can see that he gets a lot of pressure, but I have somebody that helps him out with that too. I've got somebody that talks to him from Notre Dame once a week, and we're just trying to keep it. Because I always laugh when people tell me their 10-year-old's an elite athlete. Like, there's no such thing, and I think as a parent, and I hope a lot of parents that have, athletic kids hear this, that you have to let them drive it. You cannot get behind. You cannot be the ones pushing and pushing and pushing. It doesn't work. So as far as interview stuff is concerned, I mean, who knows, right? Like, he's nine. He's not going to be, I don't think anybody's going to interview him for another 10 years. Hopefully he'll mature enough if anything ever happens for him, but I don't know.
For sure. And also I guess in the regards of talking about your kids, do you feel like when you went through your darkest points of your life, I guess going through the substance abuse, I guess, do you feel like that the aspect of your kids sort of came into more of a brighter picture in terms of helping you get out of that stage of your life and sort of like reshaping it all together?
Yeah. I mean, the sad part about all of that is when it comes to addiction, is that nothing was going to get me out of it other than reaching out and getting help. Not even my kids were enough for me to, like, stop. And that's the tragedy. There was a moment again where everything changed for me, where I just said, I'm going to get sober. And I've been sober ever since. But yeah, I mean, the thing that the benefits are is that I have a relationship with my kids that's incredible, But it wasn't enough for me to have kids for me to say, okay, I'm going to stop. That's how bad it was, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess you're very, I guess, aware and open to talking about sort of the battle that you went through in terms
Yeah, absolutely.
of substance abuse, because I think it's important. I think it's good for other people who are struggling with this to also hear the message that you have to tell them about what you went through and how to get through it. You
I
went
think for
through.
me, I think for me too, is I still identify as an alcoholic. If someone asks me, hey, do you want to have a beer? I'm like, I don't drink anymore. I don't see myself better off or better than, the guy that's homeless on the street drinking, out of a fifth of whatever, right? I'm just like him, and I think that's important, is that I continuously identify as that person. I go to meetings sometimes 7 days a week. I have a lot of sobriety. But mostly what I, my role is now is to be of service and to help others, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, like w during that sort of stretch where sort of you went through that addiction phase, and it got worse and worse, but you sort of had that aspect of that ad addiction, I guess, as something to soothe yourself with, and it was that sort of point of view. And then sort of when you decided to take rehab, when was that? Do you remember?
2000, I want to say 2008, maybe. Yeah, around that time. And that was the beginning, you know. But, you know, even being in a facility like that and as nice as it was, that's called a spin dry. You know what I mean? Like you're there for 30 days. You gotta, the real work comes when you come out. And yeah, I took what it took, but I every day that I wake up or put my head, you know, on my pillow at night, I just have a list of gratitude, you know, that I can go to bed again sober and wake up and start all over again, you know. And
Absolutely.
this is after years of doing that, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I'll use the word wild, because it's wild to think that like we've come this far to see, I guess you've come this far, especially with everything you've been through, you've dealt with, you've battled with, and now you've come out through to the other side, and now here you are sort of living happily, and seeing your kids have success in their own ways, and you playing your own music, but also doing it for other artists, which makes you find enjoyment at the same time. I guess if there was one thing that sort of, I guess if there was a few things aside from your kids and your music that sort of like keep you going during those rough days, I guess what would those be?
What was the, sorry, what's the question?
So like aside, well, like aside from your kids,
Oh, I see what you're saying. I guess the way I would answer that question is when I was spending so much time in this crazy life, which was touring, promo all around the world, three, four times over, China, now to Russia, and let's go back to Scandinavia. Okay, we're in Southeast Asia. I had no control, you know. I was doing what I was told to do. And again, I'm grateful for every minute of it, but when you spend that much time and you just have absolutely no power, you know, you start to really deteriorate, you know, you start to disintegrate as a person. And I think not outside of my kids, and it was when I finally stood up and I said, no, this isn't good for me. I'm not doing this anymore. I mean, it was shocking, you know, for everybody, but it, you know, I needed to have the freedom, you know, of being the person that I wanted to be. And I can remember that I was constantly lied to, you know, like I would be in Thailand finishing up a show and I'd be like, okay, I get 3 weeks off now. Everybody's promised me 3 weeks off. And then I would be like, yeah, I know, but we just have this, like, okay, after this, there's just one more thing. And it was always just one more thing, right? And so what happens is you start just becoming really resentful. Right. Now, again, there are people, there are artists that love this. They love whatever it is that's going to keep them in that spotlight. They'll do whatever it takes. And that's, I have no problems with that. I respect that. But my conscience, my whatever it was inside of me, it was just, it wasn't resonating with me. And so the more you're something's fighting with you, the more you're having that inner struggle, and the more you have people around you where you know it's just a bunch of dollar signs and it's like it's that's all they care about, you start to become incredibly angry. And I felt that, you know, I started like really lashing out at people. I can remember throwing things. I can remember walking out of interviews in the middle of it, you know. But it took about 10 years after to realize, like, you know what? I made a lot of mistakes. I made a ton of mistakes and I have to own my part. But I don't regret it. I don't regret stopping, you know. But being on that TV show the other day was like one of the best experiences of my life, because being home and being back in Canada and being with all these incredible people on that TV show. I mean, I'm talking about the contestants, the producers, the judges. It was just such a special moment for me, you know? And so it was nice to kind of come back from all that resentment and anger and bitterness, right? And be like, okay, here it is, guys. Here's me all over again, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, like, especially when with those judges, Cardinal Official, Trish Stratus, Lily Singh, and Howie Mandel. And Howie Mandel's been through a lot of dark points of his life too, where he's used his skill and his what he's been well known for, his comedy, and sort of taking the comedic aspect and taking yourself out of that dark hole that you're in, and sort of like avoiding that spiral effect of saying that, well, I'm going down and down and down, but now how do I bring myself right back up into the water and back up to the surface? And it seems like that's what's happened here with you. You know, like, it's sort of like you had that spiral effect, but then you sort of realize sort of where you needed and when you needed to get help, and now you sort of have found yourself back up to the surface, and here you are now enjoying life and being the happy guy you are, and the so forth. I mean, there's just been so many different things, I guess, that I could just tell you and ask you about. I mean, there isn't so many questions that you can ask a person like you who's had a resume full of incredible experiences, incredible success. And I mean, I do see a piano behind you there.
Oh yeah.
I was wondering.
That's like the most, I've got a fairly large collection of pianos. I collected over 75 keyboards in my life and still have most of them in storage, but that one's my baby. That's the, that's an S6. It's a handmade Yamaha. It's like a Ferrari.
Absolutely. Well, I wouldn't be surprised with a musician like you to own pianos like that. So, I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, but I was wondering, like, since sort of you went on CGT and you performed that song Bad Day, do you mind giving us a taste of that song?
Are you serious? Yeah, I mean, sure, why not? It's funny, you know, I actually don't play it often. I won't sing because I haven't got my singing voice on. Do you want me to put it over here? There you go. You know what? You're lucky, man. You're Canadian, right?
Yes, I'm. I am.
Okay, I would not do this for anybody else then. I don't know if you can see it.
That was amazing.
It almost sounds like I've been practicing it. That's so funny. I haven't played it.
Like, honestly, you seriously have not lost a touch. It just shows. I mean, like, it just shows the experiences that you've had in your life and playing that song, even if you don't sing it. I always find it fascinating whenever someone plays a piano and says they don't feel like singing at the same time. I sort of like say, well, I mean, the beauty of, I guess, music is not only the person's voice, but it's a storytelling through the tone of the sound. Yeah. And sort of when you hear that sort of the beginning of that song, everyone's like, oh, that's an identifiable song. I know who'd sing that song. I know the song title. That's the thing. Like, I always I watch American Idol. And right. I always listen to, I don't listen to Luke Bryan, I don't listen to Katy Perry, like, whatever, their modern music, but I listen to more of Lionel Richie and his advice that he gives to contestants, and he gives it straight to the heart. He gives you real.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that gives you no BS. And
right.
I remember he says this to a different artist. He says, when you come on a show like this and you're trying to make yourself an artist, and it's a different thing from a singer to a contestant to an artist are three different things and three different
Totally right. You're
phases of your
absolutely right.
life. And
You
he
have to
says,
understand. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But the other thing is that for me, like just in my experience, and this is the way that I saw this stuff, it's like being for me, it was about shedding, it was about developing, it was about writing and being told that's no good and writing again. So it was constant work, and I had this like super drive to be better and better and better and better, but I didn't have any kind of media platform to step onto. So by the time I got to, even doing the last show on American Idol, for example, I had invested so much time and energy into creating something on my own that by the time I got onto that show, not I wasn't a contestant, but I played the final season. I think they used the song for the sending the whatever the guests off the show. And it was by the time I can remember getting, I already had it all figured out. Like I already had that. I already had those skills. You know what I mean? But as far as like, I think it's hard for some people, but I still have that old school approach of how to develop. You know what I mean? Like that worked for me, But I think sometimes, like for example, just what I loved about the show the other day was it wasn't just musicians. It was like all these incredibly talented people, dancers, magicians. And all I could think of in the back of my mind was like, oh, I hope this is an opportunity for them. I just for every one of them, because they've worked so hard to get there.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, like even Lionel Richie, like I love when he says something about being an artist is you need to have your own unique sound, and you need to be identifiable. If I can't identify who you are as an artist, then you got to do more developing. You got to go back. You got to do something that you don't like, and you're gonna have to get out of that shell and sort of
Well, I
keep.
think, yeah, and I think a lot of I mean, in my opinion, some of the things that go on with some of the pop music that was played is now is like I can't even tell you who's singing it. They all sound the same to me, They all have the same vocal sound, and one of the best opportunities I had as I was working with Rick Rubin. I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a genius. And he's done everything from the Chili Peppers to AC/DC. He's incredible. Beastie Boys. I remember talking to him one time and he said, you have to make sure that the music that you're creating, the music that you're writing and the music you're singing resonates with you first. You have to appreciate what you're doing. You have to identify with that. You have to move towards that and embrace that part of it. Now, if you can do that, then the hope is that other people will also resonate with it. But if you're second guessing yourself and you're trying to write pop songs that sound like other pop songs, I don't know. I think you're kind of going, it's the wrong approach, And I think you'll get, I don't think it'll work, for the most part.
Yeah, and that's sort of the beginning mechanics of songwriting, really.
Right.
Like it's sort of like, okay, what do you want to write about today? Because like you can ask somebody, what do you want to write about in a songwriting room, and you can be like, well, I want to write about love, but like, what about love? Like, what are you trying to tell people about love? Like, are you going through a hardship? Are you going through some sort of relationship issue that you want to talk about in a song to make it portray that message of it? Which I find really interesting. But I mean. We're winding down the time here, but it's been a pleasure to be able
Hey man,
to
you
really
too.
just soak up everything you have to say about music and the music business. And it's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Oh man, yeah, it's been my pleasure too. And I just want to say thank you for inviting me on and give my love to everybody in Canada, okay?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we've reached the end of our time together, but thank you so much for speaking with me. To those who made it this far, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Canadian singer-songwriter, Canada's Got Talent Season 3 contestant, Daniel Powder. To reach Daniel, you can connect with him through his socials. If you enjoyed this episode, you'd like to help support the podcast, feel free to share with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating or review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow the show on all social media platforms. I've been your host, Jigme Kelsang. Thanks for tuning into the show.